It is Monday, July 13th. Earnings season is officially here, and the market is looking a little frayed. We are looking at the tech sector's AI obsession, the collapse of the Platinum campaign, and why your car loan might be a ticking time bomb. Let's get into it. Earnings season kicks off this week. The market is split between the perceived stability of traditional banks and the long-term viability of spending on artificial intelligence. Investors are keeping a close watch on semiconductor leaders like Taiwan Semiconductor and ASML. The big question is whether these companies still describe their businesses as supply constrained. If they do, it supports the case for continued investment in AI infrastructure. If they suggest demand is normalizing, we could be looking at a repricing of expensive tech stocks. The banking sector faces high expectations, with almost no sell ratings for firms like J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs. Here is the thing: that consensus creates a risk. If the economy slows, those 2027 and 2028 earnings estimates look awfully fragile. Bank stocks will likely move based on what management says about macroeconomic sensitivity rather than their quarterly numbers. We are also expecting June CPI and PPI data this week. The consensus expects headline CPI to drop to 3.7%, with core services inflation cooling. If the data matches that, it supports the view that inflation is not picking up again, which helps stabilize stock valuations. If it comes in hotter than expected, the market will have to rethink interest rate paths. That would be particularly painful for highly leveraged companies. Things are getting significantly worse in the Strait of Hormuz. A series of retaliatory military strikes between the United States and Iran has essentially ended the brief period of calm following the previous ceasefire. The political situation inside Iran is, to put it mildly, a mess. Mojtaba Khamenei, pronounced Mojtahkhamenei, has not been seen in public since his father died. His unverified threats of vengeance leave the regime's command structure and future strategy in total doubt. For global stakeholders, this creates a massive risk of miscalculation. Without clear communication from leadership, the chance of an unintended escalation is rising by the day. The economic fallout is already hitting the markets. The June ceasefire helped lower oil prices, but that progress has been erased. Prediction markets suggest a 3% rise in oil prices, and if this instability continues, we will likely see those costs hit petrol pumps in Australia within weeks. That is a direct link between security in the Persian Gulf and the disposable income of households. It is a hell of a position to be in, and it shows how quickly a local conflict can become a global headache. In other news, the coroner inquest into the SeaWorld helicopter collision has officially begun. The process was delayed by reports of pilot substance abuse, but it is now pointing toward much-needed regulatory and safety scrutiny. Finally, there is a trend gaining traction on social media called tanmaxing. It refers to the deliberate and optimized pursuit of a deep tan as a wellness practice. It is driven by a growing skepticism toward medical institutions and the incorrect belief that sunscreen chemicals are more dangerous than ultraviolet radiation. The clinical reality is that there is no such thing as a healthy tan. Tanning is a biological defense mechanism. Your skin darkens only after melanocytes produce melanin in response to DNA damage from UV radiation. Because this damage is cumulative, frequent exposure increases the long-term risk of skin cancer. We are already seeing the results of this in the medical field. Dermatologists are reporting more skin cancer diagnoses among younger patients, including teenagers who are now undergoing surgery for entirely preventable conditions. There is a persistent belief that modern medical advances can simply reverse sun damage later on. That is a fundamental misunderstanding of what is possible. You can improve appearance, but you cannot erase the structural DNA damage or the thinning caused by chronic UV exposure. It is strange to see this cycle repeat. It echoes the early 20th century sun cure movement, which also positioned sun exposure as a cure for illness. The difference today is that we have actual tools, like the recently FDA-approved bimatrazinol, pronounced bimohtrezinol, that offer a path toward safer protection. The problem is that the cultural shift away from preventative medicine is making those tools irrelevant. People are trading long-term cellular health for a short-term aesthetic. It's a shitty deal, but it is the one that is currently trending. Daniel Cocatajlo, a former researcher at OpenAI, estimates there is a 70% chance of catastrophic failure or loss of control regarding superintelligence. He points to the industry's current obsession with recursive self-improvement as the primary culprit. The problem is a classic prisoner's dilemma. Companies are terrified that a competitor will hit the finish line first and gain unilateral global power, so they prioritize speed over everything else. Here is the thing about those black box systems. They are inherently opaque. Developers don't actually know how these models make decisions, which makes any promise of safety, at this stage, purely speculative. Cocatajlo argues that if we wait for the public to feel the full impact of job displacement before we regulate, it will already be too late. By then, we'll be looking at superintelligence, and the economic fallout will be nearly impossible to contain. He's calling for a total overhaul, international transparency, a slower pace of development, and even a citizen's dividend to handle the economic shift. It is a grim outlook, but it's hard to argue with the logic of the incentive structure. When you treat civilizational stability like a gamble, you eventually lose the bet. Meanwhile, in the legal sector, the Jevons paradox is in full effect. Common sense suggests that if you automate routine tasks like due diligence, the total amount of legal work should shrink. Instead, it is expanding. Because AI makes these tasks cheaper, law firms can handle a much higher volume of work, effectively lowering the threshold for clients to initiate litigation or complex deals. But this brings a massive headache for the next generation of lawyers. Junior associates used to learn the ropes by doing the grunt work that AI is now taking over. Firms are now scrambling to build simulator-based training, because if they don't, they are going to end up with a generation of lawyers who have no idea how to spot the subtle errors that these models inevitably make. There is also a brewing crisis in pricing. Right now, many firms are running on venture-subsidized AI costs. If those token prices stabilize at a higher level, the current all-you-can-eat model is going to break, forcing a shift to project-based billing. In the corporate world, the era of AI for the sake of AI is hitting a wall. Investors are done with open-ended experimentation and are now demanding a return on investment. The economics of training these massive models are becoming unsustainable, with costs climbing from $50,000 for early versions to over $1 billion for modern systems. If these models don't actually capture value by replacing labor, the costs are going to fall on the companies and the consumers, and that is where the house of cards starts to wobble. We're seeing a shift toward data infrastructure. The companies that are actually going to survive aren't necessarily the ones with the flashiest models, but the ones building the secure, verifiable data pipelines that power AI agents. If you aren't showing clear gains in operational efficiency, the board is going to start asking questions. And honestly, they should. Finally, looking at China, the state is using AI as a tool for demographic survival rather than global ideology. They are embedding it into logistics, healthcare, and public services to manage an aging population and a shrinking workforce. It is an incredibly high-utility environment, but it comes with a total trade-off, the complete erosion of digital privacy. The state is trying to balance this efficiency at all costs approach with the need to prevent mass social unrest. Young workers are already protesting the displacement caused by automation, which puts the government in a tight spot. They need the speed to keep the economy afloat, but they can't afford an uprising. They are also pouring $300 billion into data centers and domestic chip production to try and insulate themselves from U.S. sanctions. It is a massive, high-stakes experiment. China is essentially betting that they can tether economic velocity to a state-managed social contract without the whole thing snapping under the pressure of rapid, automated change. It is a hell of a gamble to take with a country of over a billion people. Speculative capital is moving out of the cooling crypto market and directly into artificial intelligence and semiconductor stocks. Retail investors are driving this rotation, fueled by a sense of financial nihilism. People are frustrated by stagnant wages and the high cost of housing. They are ignoring traditional financial fundamentals in favor of high-leverage gambles on unproven assets. The valuation of SpaceX is currently serving as a primary case study for these market distortions. The company is trading at over 100 times its annual sales. That multiple ignores almost every historical norm for both industrial and software companies. Despite those numbers, Wall Street analysts continue to issue aggressive buy ratings and maintain high price targets for the stock. There is a structural reason for this optimism. Major investment banks that underwrote recent private capital raises for SpaceX stand to collect billions in fees from future activity. These banks have a clear incentive to maintain positive sentiment among investors. The Global Research Analyst Settlement, which once provided regulatory protection, has been effectively repealed. This has eroded the traditional barrier between objective equity research and the profit motives of investment banking. Analysts now risk their professional standing if they dare to issue a sell rating on a prospective banking client. This is a hell of a feedback loop. When banks prioritize underwriting fees over actual data, they keep bubbles alive by validating unsustainable valuations. We are looking at a system that mirrors the dot-com era. Back then, analysts were later caught privately disparaging the exact stocks they were publicly championing to their clients. It is the same playbook, just with different assets. The housing market is suffering from a similar kind of distortion. There is a deeply ingrained societal expectation that home ownership is a guaranteed investment. This belief drives policy decisions that intentionally restrict supply to keep prices high. It is a policy that effectively locks out younger generations and drastically reduces labor mobility in the economy. Here is the thing. When people treat gambling products like they are legitimate investment vehicles, they become incredibly vulnerable to the inevitable collapse of hype-driven assets. Market participation without basic financial education is just a recipe for predictable losses. Retail investors are consistently prone to these bubble cycles. They are the ones who usually end up selling at the absolute bottom after losing their shirts on volatile trades. If you are relying on the consensus of analysts who have a financial stake in the success of the companies they cover, you are taking on significant, unnecessary risk. Keep your eyes on the cash flows, not the hype. If a valuation looks like it has completely decoupled from reality, it is usually because someone is making a fortune while you are holding the bag. The Plattner Senate campaign has officially collapsed. The candidate's withdrawal follows a series of scandals that were eventually brought to light by the press, but only after a significant delay. Here is the thing about the Plattner affair. Political media and the factions backing him prioritized ideological utility over the standard, boring process of vetting a human being. The press spent the early stages of the campaign being reactive rather than proactive. They were essentially waiting for the scandals to reach a volume that became impossible to ignore. This isn't just a case of a bad candidate having a bad week. It is a structural failure where political movements shield their favorites from scrutiny to protect electoral viability. When you treat a candidate like a hostage that needs protecting from the press, you create a feedback loop of distrust. The public watches the media ignore obvious flaws for months. Then, when the inevitable implosion happens, the media suddenly decides to start doing its job. It makes the press look partisan because, frankly, they are acting like they only care about accountability once their own delusions about a candidate have been shattered. The second-order effect here is the erosion of public trust in democratic institutions. When you bypass traditional vetting, you aren't just taking a risk on a new face. You are removing the baseline of public evaluation that comes with a track record. Look, I get the appeal of the light switch approach. People are tired of the establishment. They want someone who promises to turn the page. But that preference for untested, charismatic figures creates a vacuum. It allows personal failings and financial irregularities to stay hidden until they become full-blown political liabilities. We see this cycle repeat constantly. The media gets trapped in the orchestra pit theory of journalism. They focus on the conflict and the breaking scandal because that is what moves the needle. But in doing so, they completely ignore the ideological blind spots that allowed an unqualified person to rise to the top in the first place. The result is a shitty situation for the voter. You end up choosing between candidates who have been coddled by their supporters until the last possible second, or those who have been dragged through the mud by a media that is only playing catch-up. It's not a surprise that modern political discourse feels like a cynical slog. When ideological movements prioritize power over the quality of representation, they burn through their own credibility. They leave the electorate with fewer viable options. The takeaway is simple. The current model of political vetting is broken. If we keep prioritizing disruptive, charismatic narratives over the basic, unsexy work of vetting someone's history, we are just going to keep hitting these same walls. We are trading long-term institutional stability for short-term electoral gains. That is a hell of a trade to make, especially when the bill eventually comes due. Organizations are trying to figure out how to manage human cognitive effort in the age of AI. The danger isn't that the technology fails, but that we use it to automate the struggle of learning, which leads to cognitive atrophy and what's being called the industrialization of detachment. Instead of just pushing for more output, some companies, like Uber, are experimenting with agentic pods. These teams pair engineers with experts to redesign entire workflows, moving away from simple task automation to actually rethinking how work gets done. It's a shift from measuring how much we can produce to how well we can oversee, and without that structural change, you're just inviting burnout. Then there is the persistent myth that success is a matter of willpower. It turns out that's backwards. High-impact results come from systemic guardrails, hard boundaries on your calendar and environment that force consistent behavior. The goal is to stop treating failure as a character flaw and start treating it as data, a feedback loop that lets you refine your strategy. By using identity as a filter and setting non-negotiable time limits, you stop relying on your own discipline to carry you through the day. Finally, we need to address perfectionism. It isn't a high-performance trait. It's a coping mechanism for feeling invisible. When people feel like they don't matter, they reach for perfection to earn a sense of significance that they aren't getting from their relationships. This is only getting worse as AI makes people feel replaceable. The fix isn't more achievement. It is shifting towards service and connection. If you want to break the cycle of burnout, you have to stop looking for validation in your output and start finding it in your relationships. It's a hell of a lot more sustainable than chasing a perfect image that doesn't actually exist. A few other things worth knowing today. If you are playing fantasy sports, stop chasing the consensus. Everyone has the same superstars on their rosters, which makes climbing the leaderboard impossible if you just play it safe. You have to take aggressive, weird risks in the final rounds if you actually want to win anything. Merging your finances with a partner is a logistical headache, even if it simplifies the monthly bills. You have to choose between a physical bank with tellers or an online platform that will not let you deposit your birthday cash. It is a shitty trade-off, either way. Companies are using what they call the Elvis Principle to market themselves. They try to balance being dangerous and edgy with being humble enough for the suburbs. It is just a fancy way of saying they want to sell you stuff without making you feel like a total sucker. 1 in 20 young car buyers are currently behind on their loan payments. This delinquency rate looks a lot like the early warning signs we saw back before the 2008 financial collapse. It turns out that buying a car you cannot afford is still a bad idea, even if the dealership says otherwise. That is the state of things for July 13th. Take care of your own house first, because nobody else is going to do it for you. See you tomorrow.